And you're tuned to KBMR FM in Nevada City, KCPC in Camino Placerville. Remember, the views expressed on this show are those of the speaker myself and do not necessarily represent those of KBMR or board staff or underwriters. Welcome to the 297th show of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices that might be mentioned today are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. I hold California Insurance License OL34249. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge's station as staff members or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it does control our economy, your country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is always about you, right? Okay. So let's take a look at the markets, as we always do. Dow at 27,797. So we made a new high just a little bit ago. Over 27,900. I don't see if we went. Let's take a look if we went over 28,000. I think we did. Let's see. I should know that right off the top of my head before I get on the air, right? Correct. Yeah, we did. We went to 28,033 on November 18th. And so there you go. New high. So that was a 28,033, because we were in the 27,000s prior to hitting it, right? Because the market went up from 27,000 and change through 28,000. That was a resistance point, according to the technocrats who believe such things. And you notice it hit 28,033 and fell back down. So it hit its resistance. It doesn't mean it's going to hit 28,000 on the nose and turn back down. It just means that 28,000 around there somewhere could be resistance. It's hard to get through that. Normally, you don't really see a market plow through a large number like that once and just keep going. It can happen. Anything can happen in the markets, right? And it didn't, you know, went up 28,033 and fell back down, and then now it's floating around 27,795 today, down 25, so we can comfortably say, for those that believe such things, that 28,000 is a resistance point. It tested it and was resisted, and down it's been to 27,813, or wherever it is today. You could say that 27,000 even below us is a support level. So if it gets down to 27,000, it could, possibility, not absolute, hit 27,000. Somewhere in there could be 26,950 or 27,000, you know, whatever. It's got a breakthrough usually and bounce right back up. So support. So it's kind of like a glass ceiling. You know, remember when Hillary ran for president, she had the glass ceiling in the hotel above us, above her, and bingo. Big surprise there, eh? Glass ceiling remained intact. Well, 28,000 was breached, but it's now 200 points above us. And 27,000, obviously 800 points below us. So we'll see. There are other markets. You know, the Dow is the most commonly watched. The Dow 30. Dow Jones Industrial Average, made up of 30 stocks. Not equally weighted, mind you. So you don't just take all the 30 stocks and divide by 30. And maybe that's how much is in each. How much of each stock is in the Dow 30. It's, some say it is biased weighted. In other words, the more stock goes up, the more weight they give it. So there are other markets. You know, when you go to a television store, you buy a TV, right? Then you go to a TV store and you got to say, you got a Sony? And they say, no, we don't sell Sonys. You got to go over to the other TV store. Well, that's like the markets here. Dow 30 sells certain stocks. They only sell 30. And you go over to the NASDAQ and you say, well, I want to buy Microsoft. That's not a recommendation to buy or sell. It's just an example. If you want to buy Microsoft, they'll say, you got to go over to the NASDAQ store. And so you buy it from the NASDAQ. There's the Russell 2000. There's the S&P 500. There's the Pink Sheets. There's a lot of different markets. So the S&P 500 is a market. And you buy certain securities there. Dow 30, there's 30 of them for sale there. And NASDAQ has a lot. And Russell 2000 has a lot, too. So generally, everybody watches the Dow 30. But in the dot-com explosion, implosion, rise, irrational exuberance, as Alan Greenspan once said, that's the NASDAQ. Okay, I think that imploded around 5,500 in March, I believe, of 2001. It's sitting at 85.16. Whoa, took a long time to get back there, right? If it imploded in 2001, it took it 18 years. So there we go. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll watch it today. We'll see what happens. What's driving the market? Well, there are all sorts of different data inputs. You know, I read a whole bunch of stuff today. I read a whole bunch of stuff every day. I don't read any novels anymore. I read The Brothers Karamazov and Plato's Republic in college. I enjoyed Plato's Republic. That was kind of a philosophy thing. But once I read The Brothers Karamazov, I vowed I would never read another book. Boring. Okay. So here we go. Money Matters today, and as an offshoot of Money Matters, we do investing in community. We cover all sorts of things. Where are you? So today, we had a real good response because, you know, in this county and indeed California, there's a lot of problems going on with fire insurance because of the massive fires. And indeed, 2 weeks ago, we had the chairman of the Coalition of the Firewise Communities, Mr. Bob Long, on. And I got a lot of nice comments from that show. We didn't get a whole lot of calls because we were talking so much. So if you want to talk to Bob today, 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555, because Bob has graciously returned. Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
All right.
Okay. It was a long trip.
It was a long trip. Glad to see you. Well, as I mentioned when we were on before, it was such an important topic here. I felt it was necessary to have you on. We'll take more calls today about Firewise Communities. And so just as a refresher, we might repeat some things. So tell us about the Coalition of Firewise Communities. What is a Firewise Community and what's a coalition?
So we're quite lucky here in Nevada County. We've got a very supportive FireSafe Council that helped form the Firewise Communities starting, I think, around 20 years ago. So currently we've got 36 neighborhoods or communities ranging in size from 20 homes to more than 1,500 homes, 36 Firewise Communities, and another 37 communities that are waiting their turn to have their evaluations assessments done and to become a Firewise Community. The benefit of this is it's what you learned in high school, teamwork. So you've got a bunch of neighbors working together to make their neighborhood less prone to fire and a safer place to live. And you get a county like ours where you have 36 communities pretty soon, the effect that 20 neighbors have in a community, you now have 20 neighborhoods in the county having that greater effect on the community. It's the old deal where the sum of the parts is, in this case, greater than the whole.
Right. And the advantages, CalFare, the kind of assigned risk of homeowners policies, which basically is made up of all the insurance companies that currently are doing business in California. Right. They're all cobbled together there. It's not a government agency,
no.
As you pointed out.
No, it's not.
But they do ask me, is it a Firewise Committee? And then they ask the name. Yeah. So there is, hopefully, a discount from Firewise Communities for that. And so, just quick in a nutshell, it's not a national program, really, but how far does it go, the Firewise Communities?
Oh, it is a national
program. Oh, it is a national,
yeah, okay. It's I'm going to lose the initials here. Mm-hmm. National NFPA, National NFPA, Fire, okay. NFPA,
okay.
National Fire Protection Association.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a nonprofit that's located back east, and they're the ones that certify communities. They're the ones that came up with the rules and the program mm-hmm. that creates the fire that creates the FireWise communities. Now it's nationwide. I think California leads as far as the number of FireWise communities, mm-hmm. and right now Nevada County is leading the state.
So we're the leader in the nation.
I would say we're the leader in the nation.
Now, it not only benefits someone from an insurance point of view, a lot of people are going to say, well, if I get a break on my insurance, sure. But I keep telling people when they call, they say, well, I've limbed up all this stuff, and you know, am I going to get an insurance break? And my answer, which kind of learned from you a little bit, is that, you know, you're doing it to benefit yourself. There are houses that survive a wildfire. True.
There are.
Yeah.
There are. I have a nephew that's a firefighter on the east side of the mountain in Washington, and his cap, when they go to a forest fire, his captain has a clipboard that's got 20 questions on it, and they roll up to a house. Fire's coming up the hill. They roll up to a house, and there's a certain number of points you have to get. Let's just say it's 10 of the 20 points.
Right.
If he goes through the checklist and you only get 9 of those 20 points,
they leave.
They go to the house next door.
Because they figure, okay,
and
all right, all
if
right.
If you question that, all you need to do is remember back 3 years and go to Lions Lake on McCourtney Road and look across the street, and there were 3 houses standing there.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's only 1, and 2 are brand new because they were rebuilt after burning down. And that's exactly what happened there. I mean, the fire department had a choice what to do. They saved the house in the middle because it was fire safe, or had
it had a better chance of survival. They basically got to you know, glean yeah. off the
because they had other places to go and other things to do.
Right. Okay, so on a particular FireWise community, then, first of all, I'd like to invite our listeners today. They're going to hopefully take some calls today. 530-265-9555. 530-265-9555. I get calls from people, and I ask them if they're in a FireWise community. They go, what's that? You know, you really can't. I did go up to Jones Ridge Road in the Greenhorn FireWise
right.
community.
Okay.
I went up there, and I will go into this guy's house to pick up a policy, and saw the sign. We are a FireWise community,
right.
Greenhorn. I went, wow. And you know what? Driving up there, with the exception of maybe 1 or 2 houses, it did look great. I mean, you know, comparatively, it was
yeah.
cleared up, limbed up. There was space around the houses. You know, there were some oaks that were next to a few houses, but it actually looked really, really good.
It's peer pressure.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Peer pressure.
So, go ahead, Bob.
It's everybody. You know, whereas when you're looking at your house, it's you with one set of eyes looking at your house. When it's a FireWise community, it's a group of people looking at the neighborhood. So you have a whole set of eyes mm-hmm. looking at the issues. And you know, like one of our neighbors, she lost her husband a while ago, and her insurance company said, you got to get rid of those junipers out in front. Well, she couldn't do it. She's 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So two of us guys said, we got a couple hours. So we went up there and we did it.
Great.
You know?
Great.
And that's what a FireWise community is all about. I mean, when we get together to do projects, I live in a neighborhood with older folks. I guess I'm one of them. But, you know, we work together to get the job done.
Right.
And so it doesn't always land on one person to take care of things.
Mm-hmm. For listeners that are out there that are wondering if they're in a FireWise community, because, you know, a month ago I was wondering myself, how do I know?
Yeah, how do you know?
So
we just keep it a secret. We make you look for it. So you go to areyoufiresafe.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Fire Safe Council's website. And, let me back up. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the map is on their website too, but I know for sure it's on the Coalition website. So you Google Coalition, FireWise Coalition of Nevada County. If you Google it, you'll find, we don't have a website. We have a Google, I'm not a techno person. We
right.
have a website that's hosted by Google. But you can find us, and on our site, you click on FireWise Communities, and there's a map.
Now, would the map have my address on there?
It doesn't have your address.
Mm-hmm.
It's a general map. It's a PDF, and it shows a region. Right. So you can tell if your neighborhood is on it. Mm-hmm. But if you specifically want information, go to the Fire Safe Council.
RUFireSafe.com.
There's a place on there that says contact us, pops up a web, an email, and email to them and say, am I in a FireWise community? Give your address. They'll send it to me or one of my associates. We'll respond and tell you.
Okay.
As best we can.
You don't know them all by heart, do you?
Not at all.
Yeah, but pretty well. You know, after we did the show, I thought, okay, I'm going to go to the website. And I went to the website, and it took me a while to poke around on the little icons that popped up and to order a defensible space.
Good.
So I did that. Got locked in about halfway. I don't know whether it was a browser I was looking at or whatever, but I'd called. And ended up getting a hold of someone that used to work for the Sierra River Yuba League that used to run Quiz Night. I won't say her name, but do you know who that is?
I can guess who
It was. I said, what are you doing there? And so I got in and I said, hey, look, I have a little trouble for this. And so I sent him an email. They were really good. They responded to email. And I said, I'm trying to order defensible space because I have a neighbor that basically his theory, and you and I spoke about this before, his theory is if you get a fire, is going. And you moved here knowing there were trees. So that's it. So I've got cleared around my house. But in back, he's got the cedars, you know, that looks like, you know, lawn.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And so two guys showed up the next day because of my email. They came up, they showed up, they called me on a cell phone. I was traveling. And they said, hey,
they have badges on?
Well, I wasn't there. My wife was there. And they said, we understand you want a defensible space inspection. And I said, okay. And they said, so what lot are you concerned about? So I said, okay, go out to the back fence and look up to the right. Come. And they looked at it, and they first said, there were two of them there. And they basically said, well, you got a nice place. It looks nice. You've done some real good limbing up. Your deck's going to go. I said, okay. And he said, you know, some insurance companies, I was unaware of this, some insurance companies, he said, are saying remove the redwood deck. You know, mine hadn't
said
that.
Insurance companies are saying a lot of things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But he looked back there and he said, you know, they're kind of limbed up. Yeah, it's okay. You know, it's not ideal, but it's kind of okay if you want to take down that other tree up there. So they're pretty helpful. I mean, they're pretty helpful. And they informed me about the 5-foot clearance. Now, why don't you tell our listeners about, I don't have 5-foot because I have manicured plants next to my house, but they had some definite input of that versus, you know, ignition points. So tell us a little bit about the 5-foot clearance.
Well, what we're asking for, what the fire scientist and what the fire marshal is asking for is 5 feet of hardscaping around your house. Hardscaping is anything from concrete to bare dirt. And the reason is embers, homes in a forest fire event, a huge percentage, I don't know, somewhere between 60% and 85%, but a big number. Homes ignite because of embers, not because of the radiant heat created by the fire front. And those embers, it's an ember storm. And those embers will land in piles of pine needles or in bushes. That they'll ignite the pine needles, and now you have a fire up against your house. And depending upon your siting, now your siting could be involved. So the idea is to keep 5 feet around your house clear, so if an ember falls there, it's got nothing to ignite.
Yeah, and I think we've all seen those photographs, those videos of an ember storm.
It really does,
and it generates your own wind. You know, so I've seen fire from firemen, and you know, you see a blaze behind him. He looks in the camera, and goes, "I've never seen anything like this." Yeah. It's just crazy.
So, you did say, like, you have some bushes around your house, and as well as the bushes are well-maintained, they're not among the plants that we consider gasoline plants. They're well-maintained, they're up off the ground, they're low, they're as low as you can get them to still look nice, and again, well-maintained and irrigated. The likelihood is less that they'll ignite. But understanding, everything burns.
Yeah, he said that they're marked as an ignition point for everything.
Everything burns.
And I did have the CAL FIRE come out 5-6 months ago. And they banged me for fire needles on the shed, which is, you know, it's totally, you know. And he said, the other thing is you got this propane tank 6 feet from your house. So I said, well, that's the way they built it.
Right.
So he wanted me to weed whack the Vinca underneath, which I did. And, but the guy, the Firewise people said, you know, Mark, they don't explode.
They don't.
They just pop with a safety relief valve. So, so basically plants next to you, whether it's a fern or a vegetable garden, everything has an ignition point.
Everything does. But a tomato plant is going to... It's going to take a lot more to ignite a tomato plant than a juniper plant. A juniper, Junipers are considered gasoline plants. Mm-hmm. They ignite in a heartbeat. I've had personal experience with this living in the Bay Area. They're on fire in a heartbeat, and our bushes got lit on fire by a firecracker that a kid threw.
Unbelievable.
And resulted in a two-alarm fire that was put out with a garden hose.
I can imagine. We're speaking to Bob Long, chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. We welcome your phone call, 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. If it's ringing, I see you there. I'll just pick up at a certain point. So 530-265-9555. One of the things that you know, they had looked at is that, you know, in front of my house is my property, so it was... clear. I got a lawn. I do have bushes up against the house. One of the things I had a question on is I run a Facebook site. It's Agrata, so I can say it on the air. If it was a charge, I couldn't, but it's free. And it's called Fire Insurance Information and Inquiries and Power Outages. Okay, I started. It's got 1,000 people on it. It's for me to plug in insurance stuff, updates, Firewise stuff, like you're plugged into that today. Mm-hmm. One of the things I plugged in was fire resistance plants, okay, that I got a list of off the web. And I took a firestorm from it because one of the plants that was on the web was manzanita. And somebody said, oh, what are you doing? And so tell me about that. Is it or is it or what?
Well, our main concern are softwood plants, pines, firs, cedars. Manzanita is a hardwood, just like apple trees and plum trees, apricot trees, they're hardwoods. Once they're ignited, manzanita burns extremely hot, but it's hard to get it ignited.
Okay.
And so that's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would never, ever plant one next to my house.
Mm-hmm.
I have two in my driveway that I decorate with Christmas tree lights.
Right.
But they're more than 30 feet away from the house. They're limbed up 5 feet, and they're thinned out, no dead branches, nothing underneath it to catch it on fire. Mm-hmm. The odds of a ember falling in my manzanita and catching them on fire is very slim. More than likely, the ember would fall through the manzanita.
Right, because it's just branches.
Because it's just branches. But hardwood trees, they're hard to ignite. Mm-hmm. And so in the typical ember storm, it's not something we're concerned with.
One of the things that they mentioned, and I kind of knew this, my deck is raised and places 6 feet off the ground. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have lattice, old.
Yeah.
That's kind of coming apart. And I'm thinking, like, oh, when they do fall apart, I burn them in the fireplace and they go up like fire. And I'm thinking, okay. Speaking to Bob, I got to really address this lattice. My thought was, I've got wood siding around a lot of it. And I'm not saying this specifically for my house, because a lot of people probably have this similar sort of thing. Then I have this old lattice. So I've got a guy there doing the deck. And I thought, maybe what I should do is the part that is exposed with the lattice, I tear the lattice off and put 1/8-inch screen and then cover that with the plastic lattice, and whether that would really help or not. And would that help if somebody, instead of putting non-wood lattice under their deck because it's got inch holes in it?
Right.
Do you see people that put screen down to the bottom of the deck, and it's got to be can't be like window screen. It's got to be that hard stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's, you're right. First of all, we tell people you never, never, ever store anything underneath your deck unless it's concrete.
We see that a lot in the county, don't you?
Bricks are fine. You can store bricks. Do not store your firewood underneath the deck.
Or your canoe.
Or your canoe. Or your lawn furniture.
Great.
You know, so you never store anything underneath the deck. Ideally, finish your underneath your deck with hardy board. It's concrete, and you're going to protect underneath your deck. Secondarily to that is 1/8-inch wire mesh, not nylon mesh, wire mesh,
right.
1/8 inch. The old code prior to, I think, 2012 was 1/4 inch. And the scientists have discovered that that's just not adequate. It has to be 1/8 of an inch. The 1/8 inch screen will prevent the embers from blowing underneath your deck and igniting the deck.
Is that a rollout? It's not stiff boards. It's a rollout,
no,
right?
Roll. It's, it's netting. Yeah, you buy it by the roll.
Okay.
And then if you want to cover that with plastic to make it look nice, yeah, there's nothing, no problem with that.
Okay, and then there's the defensible space, the distance between vegetation farther out and as it goes in, okay? In other words, it looks like, I think if I remember from the drawing at the Firewise meeting that I went to, and remind me to we'll talk about that in the meeting, there were three zones. There was a zone that was like...
Well, 0 to 5, 5 to 30, and 30 to 100.
Okay.
So 0 to 5 is hardscaping. 5 to 30 is... landscaping. You can have trees, but the trees need to be spaced. And if I remember correctly, they're looking at 12 to 16 foot crown spacing. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. 30 feet out, again, you can have trees if that's what you want, but the crowns need to be spaced 6 to 8 feet.
What if the let's say you've got 6 feet between cedars, but the branches are touching each other way up high?
Well, that's unhealthy for the plant. I'm not a master gardener, but that's unhealthy for the plant.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything has to be limbed up 15 feet.
Okay.
Or 1/3 the height of the tree.
And the thinking being, because of that, is ground fire getting moving
so
that way?
A ground
wouldn't
fire
it, wouldn't
coming
it move
through
the treetops?
If you get a crown fire, nothing is going to stop it. But if you have the trees spaced properly, you're going to slow the fire, and that's what Cal Fire is looking for, is if you can slow the fire down, then they can get ahead of it and protect structures. So we don't have fire breaks anymore. The old days where they would cut a 50-foot path with a D8 cat and clear. Now we have shaded fuel breaks, and it's reduced fuel that slows the fire, giving the fire crews a chance to get ahead of things.
Are there areas, and obviously they can't limb up every area in the county, but I did notice I was going down Brunswick, and the county had done some work there, limbing up by the road. So there are areas that they don't even bother to go into. They're deep and thick, right? They just say, heck with that. But they do some work around roads and all that?
There's 500 miles of county roads that are county responsibility. They have funding to clear between 60 and 75 miles per year. That's what their budget allows. We have several grants out there. Matter of fact, I just wrote a letter of support for a grant they're working on to get more funding to work on the remaining roads. I mean, you do the math at 75 miles a year and 500 miles to work on. And after 4 years, it's hard to know that a crew has been through.
Are they working on a certain amount of feet on each side of each road?
10 feet.
Limbing? Is that what they're doing? Or are they just knocking them down?
They're knocking them down.
So basically we have the road as a break, and then we've added
20 feet.
Okay.
10 feet on either side.
Okay.
But there is 500 feet of county road. There's over between 1,500 and 2,000 miles of private roads. And these are roads that miners built. Some of them are one lane wide. Some of them are code compliant two lane roads. Those are the ones that we really need to work on, because the owners, it's privately held, and it's the owner's responsibility to clear those roads.
Are those roads like, I don't know, do you know where Jones Ridge Road is?
Not off the
top.
It's up
Greyhound. I noticed the further and further up I went, and took a left on another one and a right on another one, I got to the point where his driveway was a dirt road way, 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 way up there. It was single lone, right? And he got up at the top, and he's sitting in a nice view. And I said, forgot the gentleman's first name, but I said, well, you got a nice view, but here's the thing. You know, the fire's, Bob's told me, the fire's coming from down there, because he had this valley. And I said, you know, you see a fire down there, you get out,
right?
Because you've got a long way down, and there's one road, and you know, it was so. Does the Firewise community does it offer any, or does it have at its resource any suggestions for evacuation, when to leave, et cetera, et cetera? Where can someone find that out?
The best time to leave is now.
Not now. We end at 1 o'clock, Bob.
Yeah, not at 1 o'clock.
But everybody
should be signed up for Code Red.
Right.
If you're not signed up for Code Red, you've been asleep.
Tell us about
It's easy. You go to the MyNevadaCounty.com. You can search for Code Red, or you can go to Office of Emergency Services. Mm-hmm. There is a link right there that leads you to Code Red. Follow the breadcrumbs, one of the better written websites I've ever seen. I'm not technically inclined, and it was real easy to do. Sign up. Be sure you put, when you sign up for Code Red, there's 2-800 numbers. Be sure you put those numbers in your phone book. Title them Code Red.
I did.
Good. So then when you get that phone call at midnight, you don't think it's a marketing phone call. And then mark them as a favorite, so they ring through at night when you turn your phone to do not disturb. The minute you get that Code Red call saying to it that there's a fire and it's time to evacuate, just leave. Don't think about it. Just get in your car, and good for you.
Yeah. Came after. So are they, if I plug in my phone number, does it know where I am? Because it's not going to go out to the county and say, hey, we got a fire, and everybody evacuate.
No,
it must know where I am, right?
Well, part of Code Red's putting your address in there.
Did I do that?
I think you did.
Maybe I did.
Must have. So Code Red is activated in two ways. So one of the things you have to do is, if you have friends staying at your house, sometimes Code Red will activate a cell tower. And everybody within the range of that cell tower will get a Code Red phone call.
Is it a call or a text message?
All the above.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, it's a phone call, it's a text message, it's an email, depending upon what you tell them to do.
So it's not always tower specific or area specific. It might be how many people
tower
are plugged
specific.
In. Okay, so that would help for a lot of the people who don't.
But yeah, it's area specific, and they'll tell you it's time to go, and so don't think about it. Just get your dog, your cat, your go bag, because everybody's got a go bag. I know they've all got a go bag ready to go.
Yeah, sure.
And get in your car and leave. One car, only one car. Don't drive both cars.
Because they'll just clog more of the highways.
You're taking up somebody's space on the highway.
Kiss off your other cars.
We ask you not to drive your RV or your fifth wheel, because then you take up not only three car spaces.
Can't turn around, can't back up.
Can't turn around.
Yeah. I would probably take a truck, and just as a general rule, how much time should I take? I would say, let's take the hard drives and the file cabinets. I mean, but that's going to take a half hour.
You know? I hope not. I don't know why. You grab your go bag, you grab the hard drive, you grab the dog, get in the car, leave.
Right.
I mean, we're talking.
We don't know how much warning we'll get. That's the thing.
You don't.
Yeah,
and the thing is not to second guess. I mean, I know people worry about thieves and whatnot, but I think the internet has helped us see those few instances where thieves take advantage of things. It's a felony to engage in a burglary during an evacuation, regardless of the sum of money stolen or items stolen. It's a felony.
Well, I know on the Cal Fire, the Cal Fire plan only insures against fire.
Right.
So if a tree comes down because of fire, you're covered.
You're covered.
If a tree comes down because of wind, you're not. Well, they do have a check mark, vandalism and malicious mischief. But you also have to have that on the smaller policy, because the vandalism and malicious mischief must be caused during a fire event for CalFire to cover that.
But you're supposed to have a wraparound policy.
Exactly, which covers it in case you go out to dinner and somebody spray paints your house. Exactly. Okay, we're talking to Bob Long, chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. 530-265 9555 530-265 9555. So somebody calls, they say, you're not in a Firewise community. Or they could say two things or three things. One, you're not, and nobody's working on it. Two, you're not approved, but somebody is working on it. Who's the person? And three, you are. Okay. If you are, is the chances are that you've been contacted? Somebody came to your door or called you?
More than likely, the effort's been made. Communication is one of the harder things. I'm in a lucky community. I have 65 neighbors, and I can put a letter in everybody's mailbox. Matter of fact, I hire grandkids to do that.
Uh-huh.
Other communities, the ones that are 1,500, 2,500 in nature, it's very, very difficult to contact all those people.
Right.
Some people don't use internet. Some people choose to ignore emails. Other people ignore snail mail. I have one neighbor who doesn't answer his phone, just refuses to answer his phone and ignores snail mail. So communication is hard, but the odds are if you're in a FireWise community, the effort's been made to contact you.
Right. So if somebody is, like my house, I've never been contacted. So now I would call and say, okay, here I am. And you guys are going to say one thing. Well, somebody's working on it. This is the person's phone number.
Yeah, we'll
respond. Or nobody's working on it. You do it.
So again, rufiresafe.com.
Right.
Fill out, send them an email. There's a link. Mm-hmm. Send them an email. They'll forward that to me, and I'll get back to you with the answer to your question.
Okay. 530-265-9555. We had a note come through the door. You couldn't see it because you're facing the other way. The question was, you remember the guy that got obliterated in Mount St. Helens that had a house on the lake? Okay, famous guy, he wasn't going to go. Yeah, he had a house on whatever that lake was, and he said, I'm not moving. And poor Harvey was obliterated. Nobody ever knew what happened to him, but he was a legend. The note on the door said, shelter in place, ?
Well, it's borderline.
Where would you go?
It's borderline on a four-letter word. People want to...
Starting with D?
Sheltering in place is probably... That's the last thing you want to do. Again,
yeah, because
you get code red, alert, leave. Mm-hmm. If a tree falls across your road and you're stuck, the best place to be is in your home.
Oh, is that true?
Well, you look for the biggest shelter you can find. A fire front will flash over, and the odds are relatively good that if a fire flashes over, you'll survive in your home. Something I learned.
Even though I see burnt out hulks with just a chimney, there's a chance there?
There's always a chance.
A chance.
Yeah. It's your better chance. I just learned the other day that wool doesn't burn. So there should be a run on wool blankets.
What about in a swimming pool?
The problem with being outside is oxygen, gases and fumes. Yeah. Sheltering in place is something that professionals do, and they know how to do it. I've talked to guys who have done it, and they've survived. Mm. But if you're in your home, you fill the bathtub full of water, you put blankets and wet towels on all the underneath all the doors to keep the smoke out. You close the windows, and you hunker down underneath a wet wool blanket, and
in the bathtub.
Get in the bathtub. Get in the shower, and hopefully you'll survive. If you're in your car, you keep the windows up. You keep you turn the vent air conditioning off, and you stay inside your car. And
somebody might say, "What about ignition of the gas tank?"
So I talked to a guy who was on a fire crew that survived a flashover on a mountaintop, and he sheltered his crew, six people, sheltered underneath their fire blankets. Next to a truck, the mirrors on the truck melted, but the fuel did not ignite. And
I wonder what his thinking was for next to a truck. A fire can't come through the truck.
Well, it was part of their shelter.
Yeah, okay.
It sheltered them from. They were on the downhill. The fire hit the truck first and then flashed over top.
Okay.
The fuel did not ignite. Mm-hmm. No, that's normally not a concern.
Say we've got homeowners out there. You had mentioned to me, and I did learn something, and I thank you for that. Fire normally comes uphill.
Oh, of course it does. Yeah, it comes uphill. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any, 90% of the time it's coming up the hill. So you can pretty much point where it's coming from.
That's why when you live on the top of a hill, 100 feet is not enough. there's a calculation, and it gets more complicated, so we don't get into mm-hmm. it unless we're at a home where we're doing an advisory visit. But there are graphs, and you measure the slope of the hill that extends the 100 feet out further.
Yeah, the steeper the slope, the faster it moves.
The faster it moves, the more land you have to have cleared.
Okay. What if a guy's in a completely flat area? It's going to depend on which way the wind comes.
Yeah, then it's the wind.
Yeah,
but, again, 100 feet will more than likely save your house because the radiant heat from a fire 100 feet away from your house is not going to ignite your house.
Embers.
The embers will.
Yeah, yeah. Is there such thing? Oh, by the way, we're talking to Mr. Bob Long, chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities, 530-265-9555. So we will take a couple of calls here, Bob.
Okay.
You're live on the air with Mr. Bob Long.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Mark. I am at the top of the hill. Not right now, but at home I am. And I've cleared as far back as my property goes. It's very park-like, but my neighbor right over the property line has a whole bunch of matchsticks, very tiny cedars, and I offered to go in and clear them by hand with a chainsaw, and he said, stay off my property.
Well, been there, done that.
Not a very friendly neighbor. So here's the deal. So you did the right thing. So step number one is you go talk to your neighbor and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to make my house fire safe. Do you mind if I come and clear some of the land? Number two, if you're in a Firewise community, you engage whoever the chairman is of the Firewise community and ask them to go knock on the door and say, hey, will you consider clearing some of your land? Most of the Firewise communities have a letter that we hand out, and it's a very non-threatening letter that says, we've taken a look at your house, and based on the codes that we enforce, don't want to use the word enforce, the codes that we use, we suggest that you do X, Y, and Z. If all of that's...
So is he legally bound to clear it?
I was getting there. That's number three. And that's the last thing we go to. Yes, he is. So what you can do is go to the MindNevada.com,
right.
Go to the Office of Emergency Services. When you get to the web page, Office of Emergency Services, there's a link on that page. There's an icon and a link, and it says, I want a fire inspection.
Yeah, it's down lower down to the right. Mm-hmm.
The right.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Basically, it's better to have a friendly relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
Always.
And let me at the end of the story, when you talk to the fire marshal, you talk to Terry McMahon, he'll tell you that 95% of the time, talking to the neighbor, his fire marshal talking to the neighbor gets results. They only go to enforcement in less than 5% of the cases.
What if they can't financially afford to bring in a masticator or whatever?
That's actually not addressed in the law. The law says that they must either allow you to clear or clear a 100-foot radius around your house. Now,
in the name of self-defense, if I were to go in there with a chainsaw and clear it,
that's bad. You can't do that. That's against the law.
You're going to come out there with a Mossberg or a Remington.
I couldn't claim self-defense.
But what you can do is, you go to the Office of Emergency Services website, you ask for an inspection, a fire marshal will come out, he'll issue a citation to your neighbor. And then at that point, it's for you, you may end up having to pay 50% of the cost of creating that safe zone around your house. But the law says that you must be given 100 feet of defensible space around your house. And if your neighbor chooses not to comply, then there's a citation. The citation has a financial penalty connected to it. The first citation, I think, is $150 or $120, something mm-hmm. like that. The second citation is double that. The third citation goes up to, I think, $1,200.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
After that, it goes to code compliance. Once it hits code compliance, then the county can get involved, and they can...
Right. And, yeah, unfortunately, I'm up against two phases, undeveloped land. So
doesn't matter, undeveloped or developed. whoever owns that land has to give you 100 feet of defensible space. CFR 4291 in the California code says that that's the law, and the county has adopted that in their ordinances, and they've attached the fine to it.
Did you have any other questions before we let you go?
That'll do it. I mean, that pretty much corroborates what I've heard before, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. We're speaking to Bob Long, chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities, and I learned a lot. I finally went to the meeting, so they call, they either say, yes, you are, no, you aren't, or no, you aren't yet, somebody's working on who to call, or if you're not in one, we'll help you establish one,
right?
Okay. So tell us about the Firewise community meetings. I know the one I went to was the first Tuesday at 5:30 at the Board of Realtors near the Whispering Pines, Crown Point Circle.
Yeah.
That's the county one, and the regional ones. I actually had a client that was having a regional one in his home.
Right, we in our neighborhood. We have potlucks twice a year.
Ah, okay.
And it depends. You know, if it's a homeowners association or a road association, sometimes they'll meet more often. They'll meet quarterly, perhaps. Mm-hmm. My neighborhood, we meet twice a year. It's a neighborhood. You know, we have contests and games and whatnot, and it's a get together, and. In the Firewise communities, it's an educational event. We do always have either a speaker or we have a topic that we talk about. Mm-hmm. So those happen. It's mandatory that they happen once a year.
Oh,
and most communities do it a couple of times a year.
And then they get approved, and then they can tell their insurance agent that they're approved. And it is a fact that some people won't participate.
It is, but what happened in my neighborhood this year and is going to help us with our insurance companies, and it's something that we build on going forward. Last year, 2018, my neighborhood documented that we spent, I don't know, it was like $6,000 or $7,000 cutting down trees, creating fire defensible space.
That's not much for a whole neighborhood. I think it's spent that myself.
Yeah. A small neighborhood. This year, we almost hit $40,000.
So. You don't have to just document; you just list what we did.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And then what happens to that info?
That info goes to the National Association, but then it also gets rolled up in a county document. So in January, February, I'll have an Excel spreadsheet that'll document the millions of dollars that have been spent in this county by people like you and me, making our neighborhoods fire safe. That demonstrates to insurance companies that there's an impetus,
an awareness
of
we're trying to help
of the consumers
right.
who are trying to do the right thing.
Somebody says, "Okay, yeah, I'd like to. I will be proactive and start one of these things." Where do you draw the boundaries? You know, let's say I live out in the middle. There's really no gated community. It's just like there's streets everywhere. And how far does somebody like me go?
Well, there's usually some kind of a boundary, a neighborhood,
like a Highway 174 back to Orzali or whatever. Okay, and then
most all of us are in some kind of a neighborhood. It takes There's no absolute numbers from NFPA. You get too big, it becomes unwieldy. You get too small, there's not enough people to do the work.
Do you provide the tools? A guy comes forward, he says, okay, I'm willing to do it. Would you sit him down and say, okay, we'll first draw a boundary, and then we'll draw on the county record so you can contact each of these people by email?
It's all laid out. We got the program all set.
Again, here's what you
go to rufiresafe.com, drop an email to them, they'll contact me, I'll contact
and
you.
Walk and walk you through on how to do it. You know? So when you reach out to your neighbors, do you go door-to-door, or do you email? Or you don't have everybody's email, I would imagine, right?
In my case, I did.
Oh.
So that wasn't a problem. We already had a neighborhood association.
Mm. A
Christmas list, Christmas card list, right? Mm-hmm. Some people do it by leafleting mailboxes. Usually there's some kind of an organization behind it, but that's part of what we do. We try to we actually have PowerPoints on how to get this done that we share with people.
So you need help. Okay. Yeah. Okay, we are speaking to Bob Long, chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. Bob, we're running out of time, yeah. So I want to thank for the phone calls. Sure, sorry we couldn't get to a few that were calling there. The websites, My Nevada County, what was that one?
MyNevadaCounty.com.
That's for the code
of Office of Emergency Services,
okay.
And information about what's happening in the county as far as power shutoffs or,
mm-hmm.
and then RUFireSafe.com is the FireWise, FireSafe Council,
mm-hmm.
And that's the doorway to get a hold of FireWise.
Any phone numbers you want to give? Or just go to the website.
No, go to the website.
And, of course, the website, the Facebook site that I mentioned is not sponsored, approved, even looked at by the Fire Safe Council. That's something that I did. And that one is Fire Insurance Information and Inquiries and Power Outages. So you can go there and check that out. And, okay, well, Bob, I want to thank you. We're running out of time. Thank you for being there, being here. Did two shows in a row. I think it's an important topic. And you have been listening to Money Matters here. And today is an edition of Community Matters. So my name is Mark Cunabrady. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making any investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices that I may have mentioned today are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly past performance. No guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of risk of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed on my opinions and the opinions of my guests, they may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, and staff. Members are underwriters. Our website is Agrata, which means it's free, moneymanagementradio.com. My name is Mark Cunabrady. Have a great day, Bob.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Get away. Get away.